confusion is not about who's eligible to vote. The confusion is it's hard to process the registrations at the same time people are voting because our system wasn't set up to do that. Mm-hmm. But we could set up a system that in fact would do that if we chose to. And I think this is a signal that says maybe we should.
We've been in this now for 7 months. So clearly we have moved out of an emergency and now we're just in a state of crisis, I guess. It's unclear really what the governor thinks, other than he doesn't seem ready or prepared to repeal any of the executive orders or the emergency declaration or change them in any way.
2020 has brought many unforeseen changes in the way our children learn. So I want to thank everyone for coming together, for the hard work and resilience, flexibility and adaptation during this time, and really rising to the challenge to keep all of our kids learning and growing.
How do you do it? How do you stay young, sharp, vibrant?
I don't try to stay young. I just happen to be very healthy, and I don't have any aches or pains. If I have like a flu, I'll have it 12 hours. I just, luckily, one of those people, I don't get tired. It's God-given.
And with us to talk about the latest polling in Arizona's U.S. Senate race, legislative leaders moving to question Governor Ducey's emergency powers and more, our former Corporation Commission Chair, Chris Mays. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. And Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting. Stan, good morning.
Hey, Steve. Hi, Chris. Good to be with you both.
So, Stan, let me start with you on the latest polling we're seeing related to a couple of polls, one from Monmouth and one from a local pollster, Mike Noble, related to the Kelly McSally race. Both are still showing Kelly with a relatively comfortable lead, though one is closer to the margin of error. At this point, a couple of weeks out, early voting has already started. Where do you see this race? Is it still Kelly's to lose?
Yeah, I think it's closer than we all think, because I think Martha McSally polls like Donald Trump light. We have a hard time scoring Donald Trump. We all know that from 2016. That's an unassailable fact. And 2020 is even tougher, because it's more difficult in 2020 to be honest to anyone. Mm. And most regular people, unlike Chris or myself or even you or Mark, we're not regular, but your listeners, for instance, people in real life, they don't want to take the rash coming at them. They don't want to have to defend themselves and say, I'm for Trump or I'm for McSally. And it reminds me of, you know, growing up, we didn't talk religion or politics because it's polite people don't do that in the public square. I think that affects this poll. So that's my big theory. But I'm dying to hear Chris tell us about her point of view.
Yeah, I am too. Chris, go ahead. McSally light is an interesting phrase. I think Stan's going to get some bumper stickers out of that one.
I don't know if that works on a bumper sticker, Stanley, but no, I mean, I think this race is pretty well baked. And I'd be really worried if I were Republicans right now. And in particular, Martha McSally. I mean, we just got fundraising numbers back as well. And Mark Kelly reported raising $38.7 million in the third quarter, a total of $83 million. I think even Stanley Oscar Barnes has probably never seen anything like that in his long career. So this is, he's got the fundraising advantage. He still is, 5 to 8 points up in the polls, depending on the polls. And I think, we are also seeing record turnout among Democrats. The ballots that are coming back are clearly advantaged Democratic Party, about a 46,000 ballot advantage among those who've already turned in their ballots, it sounds like. So this is a tough one for Martha McSally, and it's really mystifying to me how she has managed to not really take advantage of her strengths, which is that she is one of the first female fighter pilots in the United States, used to be a moderate Republican representing Southern Arizona, not anymore. I think it's a tough race for her right now.
Stan, and I won't use your full name when I ask you this question. I assume people only do that to you if they're anything like me when they're upset with you.
No, it's affection or it's motherly. It's I'm not sure. Chris,
well, in my case, I won't go in either direction. But for Martha McSally to win, does Donald Trump have to win Arizona as well, do you think?
Yes. I think they are tied. Well, McSally's eventual victory, should it come, and I think it will, all right, I'll just be on record for that, I think it will, is directly tied to the turnout model and performance of the Trump support voter. I think those voters want to go Trump McSally for the most part. I'm sure some of them will tail off. Some of them will do something different. But if this is my grand theory that Martha lost, Senator McSally lost by 40,000 votes statewide in 2018, the Empire Strikes Back year, the year Democrats put four statewide candidates in office and almost won the legislature, reacting to Trumpism because it was so new and Trump was not on the ballot, she still barely lost to the best politician in Arizona today, Kyrsten Sinema. 2020 is Trump on the ballot and Martha is a better candidate and the turnout model will be different. This is why I think she can win, but they are related.
Chris, let me ask you kind of the inverse question here. Do you think that Mark Kelly can win if Joe Biden does not win Arizona?
I actually do think that he can. I think that Mark Kelly, in a way, Joe Biden may be riding on Mark Kelly's coattails a little bit and sort of the reverse of what we normally see. But I actually think they're both Biden will win in Arizona by a little bit, and Mark Kelly will win more comfortably in Arizona. And for both of them, I think it's just the fundamentals of the situation that Arizonans are facing. We still have a COVID-19 crisis in this state. Our Republican elected officials handled that disastrously from the federal level, from Trump on down to Ducey. And Martha McSally, you know, and Martha McSally has voted numerous times to eliminate the Affordable Care Act, probably obviously a terrible vote in the midst of this pandemic. So those fundamentals are going to make it difficult for her to win here and for Trump to win. And then you throw into that the fact that Mark Kelly is enormously popular, former astronaut, and has about $19 million on hand, I think, and that's about $1 million a day for the next 19 days.
Well, Stan, we've had this legal back and forth in terms of the voting registration deadline being extended a bit, then being cut off and going back and forth in the courts. Get out the vote efforts are always important. You have to have voter enthusiasm. Do you see equal enthusiasm on the Democratic and Republican sides this time around? Because many people are saying that Trump thing you're talking about, getting used to Trump, is still... there's still a lot of passion among Democrats and even independents. Are you seeing this as even, or are you seeing one side having more enthusiasm than the other?
No, it's fun. That's my overarching theory about how this election is going to go is who's got the energy. In 2018, it was definitely my Democratic friends had the energy. In 2020, I've been thinking the Republicans have the energy. But recently, like in the last couple of weeks, I've decided this thing feels as energetic on both sides as possible. As I just can't imagine a higher on the dial score for both constituencies, both base of the Democratic side and Republican side. So I on live radio here with you, I cannot tell you who's got the energy. And I think that's going to end up being an incredible thing, incredible important thing.
Well, Stan, if the sides are equally energetic, as you suggest they are, does that negate any advantage that one side might have were it more energetic?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I'd like just for clarity to be able to say, well, the Democrats have it all and therefore, or the other way around. But the voters are going to deliver and we're going to, all this supposedly chattering class smart people are going to have to Monday morning quarterback it and say what happened. I do think one thing that we don't talk about enough is the Jeff Flake constituency. It's what I could label it. Arizona's a center right state. That's what we are. And there is a voter there that can't stomach Trump's jackassery, but also cannot take the Democratic platform off the left edge of the spectrum. And what is that guy going to do? Is he not going to vote? Is he going to write in Chris Mays as a write-in. Yeah. What's she going to do? That is a big deal right there.
Well, Chris, we need to get you on. I want to very quickly, Stanley, very quickly. I'm surprised you'd mention Jeff Flake because of your history with him running against him. Anyway, Chris, go ahead. Your take on this? We have about a minute left till break.
No, I really think that, well, Stan's right. I mean, in the sense that, you know, this is going to be fascinating and none of us really knows how it's going to go, but I think it's going to be fascinating to see what independents do down the ballot, because I really think they're going to break for both Biden, or enough of them will break for Biden and for Kelly, but will they also break for the Corporation Commission Democrats? Personally, I hope so. And will that, how far down the ballot, including these key legislative races, will that go? But this is going to be such an enormously high turnout race that it's pretty unpredictable.
That is former Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays also with us. Stanley Oscar Barnes of Copper State Consulting. We'll be right back with the Friday Newscap in a few minutes. It's the Friday Newscap here on KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today are former Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays and Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting.
So, guys, I want to ask you about some news that came down this week about a new ad hoc legislative study committee, which is a mouthful of a way to say that it seems like some state lawmakers want to look at maybe reducing some of the governor's emergency powers. There's been a lot of complaining from some members of the legislature that the governor has maybe abused the authority that he has or has taken used it for a little too long. There have obviously been some lawsuits by different business groups trying to overturn some of the provisions of what the governor has done during the pandemic. Stan, you often on the show talk about the concept of raw politics. I'm wondering if this is an example of that the legislature is trying to maybe use political muscle to take some of this authority back.
I like that, Mark. Call it what you will, but this is how branches of government speak to one another. They do things, and the legislature, any legislature, Democratic driven or Republican, is jealous of its own authority relative to the executive. And Governor Ducey, for good or for not good, depending on where you sit, has been really testing the limits of Arizona gubernatorial authority. And there are Republicans in the legislature that are not really down with that, and they want to exercise their own strengths, whatever they are. So this might be a big exercise in symbolism and nothing, or it might end up being something that leads to changes. I'm not sure, but no surprise at all to me that this is happening.
Chris, do you get the sense this is an exercise in futility, or do you think there will be some changes coming out of this?
Well, it's, you know, it is a study committee, and Stan probably knows best of all that study committees are notorious for not doing anything. And the truth be told, if these Republicans in the legislature actually wanted to do something, they could have come back into session and, you know, and actually enacted legislation or forced this on the governor. I will say it's remarkable to me that the legislature is complaining and making this an issue when, frankly, Governor Ducey didn't even use his emergency powers effectively enough. I mean, let's face it, you know, this is the governor who, attempted at first and did deny the ability of Arizona mayors to enact a mask mandate. Then he finally changed his mind about that when you know, hundreds and then thousands of Arizonans began to die as a result of COVID-19. And so, you know, his leadership, even with the emergency powers that he had, wasn't very effective to begin with. And now the legislature is sort of complaining about it after the fact. And so I guess my question would be, what would the legislature's response to this, led by these Republican leaders, have been? And my guess is it would have been to do even less, obviously, than Doug Ducey did, and that wasn't good enough.
Stan, what about that point from this point of view, that Senate President Fan and Speaker Bowers certainly lean conservative, but it almost feels as though they're listening to folks like Kelly Townsend or Michelle Ujanti-Rita, and the timing of this, a few weeks out of an election, is this about leadership in any way, in terms of leadership posts, as far as support going in the future? in any sort of way? Because it does seem as though these are some of the more conservative members of their caucus bringing this up.
Yeah, I don't think you need to be an extremist to worry about the authority of the executive the way these people are worrying about the authority, the way I worry about the authority. I relate it to Joe Biden doubling down on this idea that when he's president, from the Oval Office, he will extend his hand and say, every American, thou shalt wear a mask. And I wonder about the power of the government to do that, and the power of the government to extend its hand and say, you will not open. Walmart can stay open and sell jewelry, but the jewelry store has to close, the little local retail thing. The power of the government and the executive to do anything all by his or herself, one person, is something we all should worry about. So I, you know, there's no reason to say, well, the extremists don't want to do anything, therefore the governor is overreacting. Whether the governor overreacted or not, as Chris said, some people think he underreacted. Poor guy is the loneliest man in Arizona because everyone thinks he did the wrong thing. But the jealousy of the power, what he really has as power, that's a legitimate thing. You don't have to be a crazy person to wonder about it.
Chris, I'm curious, not specifically about this governor, but any governor, you know, if the laws are going to change, the governor has to sign off on them. You know, if the legislature passes a bill, can you imagine any governor, not specifically Governor Ducey, but would any governor say to themselves, you know, I think I do have too much power. Maybe I should give some of it back.
No, yeah, exactly, Mark. That is never going to happen. And it's hard to imagine it happening. And I do think it is somewhat instructive that, to my knowledge, you know, Gail Griffin and Michelle Gentry-Reader are the only two members of this new study committee. And certainly no Democratic governor would relinquish those powers. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what this study committee does, especially if Democrats retake the House and the Senate or one of those two houses come November 3rd. So we'll see about that, whether they're going to be interested in the new legislature having more say over executive power.
Well, if we do see any changes when it comes to this, Chris, do you feel like the governor's going to play nice with whichever Republicans are in leadership? Let's say Democrats do take a majority of the House and the Senate remains in Republican hands. Does that moderate the governor in any way?
Well, I think so. I mean, certainly it gives the Democrats in the legislature the opportunity to actually pass legislation. It gives them much more of a say, and Stan can opine on this better than I can, but certainly gives them much more of a say in the budget and in issues like COVID-19, and forces the governor to deal with them in a way that certainly hasn't occurred during Ducey's tenure and maybe even during the last 20 years, really.
Stan, care to opine?
Yeah, Chris is right on. I mean, the Democrats take the House or Senate or both, it's a whole new governorship. It's a whole new tension between the two branches. And there will be compromises, as Chris clearly remembers. When we had a Democratic governor in Janet Napolitano, there was a meeting of the middle, and they each had to give. So and it ended up weirdly affecting everyone's political careers too. But that's a story for another show.
Chris, let's talk about power in another way for the next few minutes, and that is the redistricting commission. We're seeing some finalists named. In terms of who's going to be the chance to be the independent, so-called independent member. We saw the first time this was done, Republicans seemed to have their hard hats on. Then last time around, the Democrats seemed to get some advantages there. Just lay this out, just how important this is for the next 10 years of Arizona politics, what the IRC decides here.
Wow, boy, it could not be, I think, any more important, obviously, in terms of the way districts are drawn and how those districts favor either Republicans or Democrats. And obviously this issue is sort of now really coalescing. The committee that's choosing the commission members is coalescing around the question of which independent is going to be appointed, because you'll have sort of an even number of Republicans on this committee, an even number of Democrats, and then this critical independent. In the past, you know, there have been questions raised by both sides about the independence. And who they were really aligned with. Seems like there are a couple of, I think, really interesting independent names being raised, including Chris Bevasi, the longtime mayor of Flagstaff, who I think really probably is an independent, and a few others. The question really is this person truly an independent?
Stan, how much strategy goes into the picks for the partisan members that the Speaker and the Senate President and the House and Senate minority leaders make? How much strategy goes into that?
Yeah, there is a lot. There's a lot of thought. There's a lot of talk behind the curtain. There's a lot of hoping that the person that they nominate will perform as nominated, that sort of thing. But it's imperfect science, and it's art, not science. It's politics and not math. And so it doesn't always play out that way. And, you know, your listeners and you guys remember, I hate this whole thing. I mean, this is really a bad thing to do, I think, but the voters approved it. So we're living with it. But I mean, I liked it when the legislature did it because honest politics took place, meaning you could go down the legislature. You could say to your legislator, this is where the boundaries need to be. And now it ends up being in the hands of only five people. And this one person, to Chris's point, is the one that makes the majority. It's either going to be 3-2 this way or 3-2 that way. And so this person is going to be the throw. And it's so imperfect, but this is what we got.
Chris, briefly, what do you think about that? Yeah, with when lawmakers used to do it.
You know, Stan raises an interesting point. I don't know that Republicans, though, would want that if the Democrats take over the legislatures. Obviously, the Democrats would love it if that were the case. But, you know, the voters did approve this system of choosing and of redistricting. And I think it works if you can truly come up with a sort of nonpartisan arbiter in the middle and somebody who will be fair to both sides. I mean, obviously that's asking a lot in today's day and age. And we haven't, today's politics are obviously so different than where they were even back when this was passed by the voters. And so I think that's the problem, is you're seeing so much behind the scenes jockeying around who this one person is going to be. And it's become so important to Arizona's political future.
All right. Former Arizona Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays. Chris, thanks as always.
You bet. Great to be with you guys.
And Stanley Oscar Barnes. This is like when Kramer's first name was revealed on Seinfeld. Stan, Copper State Consulting. Guys, thanks so much. Have a good rest of the day.
You bet.
Take care.